Monocle on Sunday is brought to you in association with Zurich Tourism.
Good morning. We're live in Zurich. You're listening to Monocle on Sunday. Coming up today, my guests, Chandra Kurt and Marcus Schugel, are here to discuss the weekend's top stories and probably much more. We'll also be in Tokyo and Hong Kong as we hear from our bureau chief, Fiona Wilson and James Chambers, and our own Andrew Tuck will be here in just a few seconds. Also ahead, a check-in on what's making news on the pages of Zeit magazine in Germany and some festive wine recommendations too. It's the 20th of December, live from Dufourstrasse 90 here in Zurich. This is Monocle on Sunday.
Live from Zurich, this is Monocle on Sunday with Tyler Brulé.
Well, good morning from Dufourstrasse, from Monocle's headquarters here in Zurich. The mission for the next 55 minutes is to keep everything jolly and buoyant. And I'm very happy to say that Chandra Kurt is here, of course, a regular contributor and, of course, the editor of Wine Cellar Journal. And Marcus Schugel is an associate professor at St. Gallen University. And, of course, he also works at the Institute for Marketing there. Welcome to the program, both of you. Guten Morgen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Marcus, I want to start with you. You've driven down also from the clouds. Here this morning, and it's a little bit also foggy here at street level. We entered this weekend with a number of changes. They haven't quite hit yet, but it's going to be a big consumer shift here on Tuesday at a time when, of course, a lot of retailers thought in Switzerland that they'd have these last 72 hours to maybe shore up what they lost earlier in the year. Alles geschlossen.
Yeah. I think that's the flexibility that retailers and manufacturers need to show right now is amazing, and I don't know how consumers are going to react to it. Yesterday, the city was packed again. It was full. The streets were full. The shops were full. I don't know how it's going to come out. I'm not quite sure if we really are that flexible in our minds to stop and go and stop and go. It makes us up and down, and I don't know. Maybe it's good that we shut down a little bit over Christmas. And not shouting so much about that we are locked down, but maybe it's going to be a real quiet Christmas. That might be a chance that we have. But I don't know how people will react. Maybe they go out.
Chandra, just before we went on air, and we'll bring Andrew over, not over from London, though he might want to come over from London, but we'll bring Andrew on in a second. But I was saying that when I came back on Friday, I was in Athens with Andrew, and I landed, the first thing I saw was this news out of Switzerland, which matches, of course, much of what's happened all over the world, that this big closure is coming. But of course, your world is F&B on so many levels. How did it hit you?
Well, I was very confused when I heard this news that they just closed the gastronomy, because it doesn't make any sense to me why just to punish them. They prepared many things. They rearranged the restaurants. They bought maybe a lot of food because of these Christmas last meetings before Christmas. And so far, Zurich, I must confess, it was like the island of the island. I felt like you could walk through the city and it didn't look like there's any big problem. So now, of course, we get a little bit close, but maybe it was a typical Swiss compromise, you know, that or close it all or don't close it. But to close the gastronomy, it made me honestly very sad, and I feel very sorry for the whole industry.
Well, I guess the good news, though, and we've touched on this a little bit across the week, all of these announcements happened and there was this win, but the big discussion all week was this whole croissant Gipfeli discussion, because could people go into a bakery or not go into it? This was the bidding story of the week. The one big, I would say, sort of rollback from the Bundesrat was actually, you can get your bakeries. I was driving in this morning, lineups were there. Everyone can have their Gipfeli this morning, which is good.
Yeah, but no sandwich if it wasn't made on the minute. So I think it's disorientating. It's almost putting you on a diet just because somebody doesn't know how to place the rules. I'm not quite sure if really closing down the restaurants, and I agree with you, Chandra, if this is the right measure. You could control people much easier if you let them eat and drink. Then they're much more controllable than you let them at home. Where should they go? What should they do? How much do they drink? It gets out of hand. I don't know. So,
yeah, Chandra, you might have some thoughts on whether people are more malleable when they've had a few drinks or not. I don't know if you're able to show them to the door easier.
Of course, you saw why the when the figures after the summer started again. It was in the French part. In the French part, you know, we're a little bit more Mediterranean, you drink a little bit more, maybe you're a little bit more social. Here in the German part, we are a little bit more controlled. So yes, of course we get closer, and of course we, but still, I mean, when the tram is full and when the shops are full and the shopping is full, what is the difference? Mm. I mean, it's not about being long together, it's just to catch it.
Yeah.
But you say on the other hand, I'm very scared what I hear about London. That the virus is much stronger and you don't even find it or you don't even see it. So, you know, my problem is I'm confused because I also don't get any figures. You always get, we don't know really, we don't know. So I need more statistics. I need more things I can work with or I can think.
Well, because you could have nothing else to do. So you just have pages of data to look at over the Christmas holidays, maybe.
Andrew,
good morning. Can you help Chandra maybe get your printer fired up and give her something to do on Christmas Eve?
Well, Chandra, I can tell you that here's some statistics. 16 million people in the UK have been told to stay at home for the next 2 weeks to not have Christmas with anybody other than the people within their household. So that's a huge number of people who, yesterday, many of them were planning to go and see families, who'd booked to take food up, had booked food from their butchers and the bakers and everybody, all cancelled. And a real panic, I think, yesterday at the train stations here as people were beginning to try and get out of the city, especially if they have second homes or if they have family that we're going to see, they took the risk. So the stations were full yesterday of people trying to get out of London.
Wow. And Andrew, it was quite, let's if we rewind a little bit, there was this maybe slight foreshadowing from Boris Johnson on Friday that, you know, he didn't want to do this lockdown, but it really felt like it was going to be after Christmas. Then wham, yesterday afternoon. You know, I guess obviously there was of course a meeting at some point yesterday, but I mean this really took the country by surprise. I mean, I think even the newsrooms almost felt that they were on the back foot on this, that it just it emerged, you know, not quite out of nowhere, but the speed was quite remarkable.
Well, the trouble is that he painted himself into a bit of a corner earlier in the year when he said, you know, that if we behaved well over autumn, by the time we got to Christmas, this would be over. We would be having a pretty normal Christmas. And then as it got nearer and nearer, and the leaders of the other countries of Scotland, of Wales, of Northern Ireland were very cautious about such a notion, he was forced to say, well, look, okay, we'll have these bubbles. But it does mean that you'll have like reasonably large groups of people coming together. You can see all your families. You can travel around the country. And then over the recent days, it's just seemed less and less likely that that was a wise thing to do. But he didn't want to back away from it. He didn't want to be seen as the prime minister who cancelled Christmas. And that's what all the headlines say this morning. Christmas is cancelled. And he is seen as responsible for it. But it's because he's too ebullient at the beginning of this without any real plan that when you get to the nitty-gritty, and the numbers here are pretty shocking, you know, that we had 27,000 infections yesterday. And that's obviously just the ones that are detected. They think that in a week, some 500,000 plus people in the UK are now catching coronavirus. But the more worrying thing is that the number of people in hospitals is beginning to edge back to the levels that we saw during the first wave. Not the deaths, that they still remain much, much lower than in the first wave, but the number of people ending up in ICU units is really on the climb. So he had to change his mind. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what people do, because I think many people had made plans. You know, we bumped into people yesterday, friends who had rented a cottage up on the coast. Their parents were already there. They were driving up today. So I would presume, like many people, they probably got in the car yesterday and went. And is that good or bad? You know, we were told yesterday to unpack our bags by Chris Whitty, who one of our leading health authorities here. He said, don't do it. Unpack your bags. Stay at home.
Andrew, I guess what you're alluding to is we've already heard, of course, there's fatigue all over the world, and of course there are compliance issues no matter where you go. But do you think it really pushes it over the edge? So as much as we're focused on Christmas cancelled today, you know, has Boris also then created a real enforcement issue as well over these coming weeks?
I think especially they must know that there's a percentage of people who are not going to comply. But, you know, on the whole, I think people, we've certainly cancelled our plans. But, you know, our plans were to go for one day to see a relative who's 93 years old. She lives on her own. We were going up to cook a Christmas lunch. We would normally see her quite regularly throughout the year. We've seen her once this year. She was so excited about us going up. She's, you know, fit and mentally alert. She craves that more company. And because we're in a tier four area and she's in a tier three area, it's not allowed for us to leave our tier. So we cannot go and see her. And, you know, of course, you don't want to be taking up the virus. But, you know, as a precaution, before we went up, we'd arranged to have COVID tests here in London. We have them booked. And we would not have seen anybody then before we saw her. And we'd explained to her the risks. And she said, it's fine. I want to see you. And if you're doing those things, and I have no concerns about it. But again, it takes away the personal responsibility, these decisions. You know, you're not allowed to do that. That even if that's fail-safe, it's pretty fail-safe. You're not allowed to do that. So the government takes over responsibility for your lives. And I think that's when people begin to think, look, I'm doing pretty good here with the rules and regulations. I understand what the risks are. Let me navigate some of this myself. But that's not allowed.
I just want to maybe do a little canvas of everyone around the table here, and you, Andrew, as well. Marcus, we were talking earlier about, you know, we see all of these regulations brought in, but do you think there's any, you know, canvassing or any sort of, I would say, common sense quorum out there? So that, let's say, the Bundesrat or in Paris, you know, do you think there's any, you know, there's any sense of testing this on the population advance? Okay, you know, before Monsieur Macron goes on air, you know, he's got, you know, 25 people from all walks of life in France say, do you understand this? Does this make sense? Because you can see, of course, all kinds of ministers and experts. It all sounds fine to them when you're sitting in your own little, you know, political bubble. Do you think that's what's missing here? Because I think, you know, the key factors, people, as Andrew said, people want to go along with this on one side, but also people are really having trouble saying, well, I don't understand. Let's use a Swiss example. You know, the bakeries issue, you want to close down all retail on a Sunday, but then you close restaurants as well, which means, of course, then the grocery stores are crazy packed on Saturdays and Mondays when you could actually just, of course, make everything a little bit more spread out. Population, do you think?
I don't think that politicians right now think about the citizens as being decision makers, but they are takers. And the opinion that they have is, from my point of view, there's a general notion that people understand when the rules make sense in a larger perspective. I mean, I can't even blame somebody in politics who's, I'm just driving on sight. I can't tell you what will happen in 2 months. If he's honest, that would be the best. But we as the citizens, if we would be asked, I would say I comply where I can comply, of course. If it makes sense for me, I even would do more. But the idea of common sense is a very British idea, to be honest. And if you would ask Germans, okay, give me a rule, I behave as I get a rule. So there's this different notion on how to deal with those rules. And doing a survey, I don't know if it really would make sense to ask the citizens what they would comply to, because there is no plan for it. There is no direction that you can take that is longer than 4 weeks. And this is what we are all struggling with. So what the only thing that we can do is we can do our best, A, maybe comply to the things that are there that we know that are working, which is testing, which is keeping away from people, trying to make it more comfortable for everybody, and then try to make the best of it. But I agree with Chandra. If we are locked down in any situation where we would move and have a certain kind of relaxation, the pressure will pump up. So I'm not quite sure if surveying would be the right idea to get to the common sense. If you don't have a plan, what do you
want? What's your view? Because as we've been discussing, you know, around this table over glasses of wine, etc., there is this disconnect, though, that, you know, people are happy to go along. And then you hear this, of course, from leaders in many corners of the world where they say, yes, you know, people will only go as far as long as it seems palatable. But now we're in a world where things are quite unpalatable now. And we're not talking about the wine either.
I think for me, the big problem is that you don't really see, you know, what is happening. And then you have all these different reactions in different countries. They have different rules, different behavior. Of course, you have different cultures and different population. But it's nothing, you don't really see something. Yes, you see images from hospitals. I don't work in a hospital, so I see less. And I think this is very confusing because we tend to forget. You know, we tend to for a moment we can be strong, but otherwise you need, again, like you say, strong rules. Or it's for me, it's a little bit of chaos all over.
Mm. Maybe, Mark, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, one point that is for me always striking, as I'm a little bit into statistics and all the stuff that is around market research, When we talk testing, it's not representative. That's one thing that is so important for and dear to us at the university. We're always sitting there and saying, okay, now you've got the number of incidents. What does this tell us? It doesn't tell us how many people have it, and it goes in the same direction. You can't even get out of the data a picture that makes it more. And so even this, not even the personal view, and it's hard for everybody to understand where to go for. And this is not to blame someone, but a little bit of statistical accuracy, having a sample that you test, having a sample of people that you might ask would help. Yes, of course.
Andrew, I want to go back to something Chandra was saying. Chandra said she doesn't work in a hospital, but do you think that's a business opportunity? If wine trolley came around in ward, good idea?
I think that would be, well, I'm not sure in the COVID units, but I think in other parts of the hospital, it might be very nice to see Chandra at any time, but certainly with a nice drinks trolley. I'm not sure they allow that these days. The days of having a cigarette bed are sadly gone.
No, I think we've talked about this. I said that when I was at one hospital in Switzerland this year, there is the... I think what is paid for by your insurance company, and then they bring you sort of the big leather-bound book, which is not on the insurance company. There's definitely wine business in hospitals, and Chandra's grinning. I'm not sure if you're consulting for any of the major hospitals, Chandra.
No, you don't have to forget that in some years ago, some 100 years ago, wine was a medicine. So I think some of it is still active. And I think to be in a good mood and to be a little bit relaxed is not so bad. It's always about the quantity, you know, but...
Of course. We're going to head over to Hong Kong right now. Our James Chambers is standing by, but we may not be able to connect to Hong Kong just at the moment. Marcus, when you look at data of the consumer market at the moment, and when we were talking, I guess, 2 weeks ago, you said that, you know, it's not just this world of either, you know, I can go to the store, I can go and shop online. I mean, there are many different, of course, access points at the moment. When you looked at 2021, if I'm a big retail player right now, I mean, you said this is the world of short-termism, but is there some solid long-term things you need to do, whether you are an out-of-town big box store, if I'm an Aldi or something, as much player as well?
Get online quick and provide service on the highest level. I think that's the thing that everybody needs to work on right now. And this is, I mean, it took e-commerce about 20 years to get in the United States to get to 20%. It took them 2 months to get to 30. So this is a sign. This is not, for me, the problem is, that's obvious. That's something that you should have had. You have had on your canvas years before. But now all of a sudden, everybody's complaining, retail is in pressure and all that stuff. It's maybe too late to wake up for some, but I think if you're not online right now and you're not properly having services in place that can compete in any kind of idea with the big players that are playing online, the trouble is going to be big.
This is, okay, trouble is going to be big, and I was going to ask Andrew about expectation management, but is there an expectation management that comes with, let's say Chandra's running a very, you know, small little wine shop outside of, let's say, big logistics in her business, so going to wrap up the box, etc. She doesn't have access, of course, to all of these big deals that a mega player would have. Is the customer forgiving, though? Are you going to forgive Chandra if it takes two more days, if it's a little bit more expensive to get her wine, as opposed to going to a big consolidator?
To be honest, I think we're going to be more forgiving than anything, because I think what we're valuing right now is much more the locality. It's much more the regionality. And this is the big chance who's smart enough to understand his customers and can deliver a service that comes from the heart, that comes from the purpose of saying, I want to serve my community. You will have big chances in that game. And you can even go global on that scale. You take your time. There you've got the time. But if you're a mid-sized retailer, when you're down here in the Seefeld, and you've got two stores around Zurich, and you're not online, I think your business is going to be very hit hard if you not really think about what you could do. If you have an idea what you're standing for, what your assortment is, what your service level is that you already agreed on in your normal store, and you try to translate it into the online world, everybody will be happy to join you and will pick up your offers, because then you're authentic. And this is what people are looking more for, more and more and more. So I think there are huge chances on the other.
We're going to go to James in Hong Kong in a second. We have him back. But Chandra, very quickly, do you see examples of small wine cellars who are already doing this, either on a national level or already have international cut through, but they're still, a cozy, more mom and pop style operation?
Well, I must say, I never got as many newsletters as since a few months, and they keep on increasing. And it's a lot of people that before maybe did one or two newsletter, and now they of course they it's the solution to go online and to send it differently. And of course I also order it, and I'm forgiving if it takes a little bit longer, because you hear the post, also the Swiss Post is complaining now all the time that they have too many, but it's their job to distribute post, so I don't know, to have more work is nice, no.
But you would think so, but
yeah. I always love to work. So I fully agree with Marcus. I think it is the key you need to have this service.
James Chambers, our bureau chief in Hong Kong, is standing by.
Morning, Tyler.
Now, tell us, you are now a really, you're a young hand, but you're also an old hand when it comes down to lockdowns. We hear that, you know, if it's to be believed officially, Hong Kong is in now its lockdown 4. Maybe you've got some survival tips for everyone else who's entering this stage. And maybe, I guess it's a slightly different picture, though, in Hong Kong. Your version of a lockdown is slightly, maybe more nuanced than ours in Europe.
Yeah, I think we're more of a lockdown light, and it kind of similar to a lot of the Asian countries that have done well. It's been more of a kind of a consistent approach rather than the kind of ups and downs and peaks and troughs and the spikes that you've had in Europe. So I think since this struck in, you know, towards the end of January in Hong Kong, behavior hasn't really changed that much. Everyone put on their masks from day one, kind of stayed a bit more at home and didn't really hang out in such large groups. And it's been a kind of a consistent, you know, behavior and message ever since then. So whereas we've not had to get used to the whole, directives from the government to stay at home, partly because, you know, Hong Kong apartments are too small. You know, people can't be trapped indoors because some people don't even have kitchens. So the government wasn't able to do that. The thing we've had to put up with is just the length of time this has been going on for, and there doesn't seem to be any clear way out yet. So I think just adapting and getting used to the rules. And I mean, I feel like now I'm just used to operating in a different way. But the nice thing in Hong Kong is we're still allowed to go outside. We're still allowed to go to restaurants. We're still allowed to go, hiking. It could be worse.
James, just tell me though, when hiking maybe is a good point, because when you get up to one of those peaks, of course, you have the vast expanse of China just beyond. And I was talking to someone running a big retail group from China earlier in the week, and life is normal. You and I have been talking about airline numbers for domestic travel, that is, are pretty much where they were last year, if not in some places they're higher. Retail is reporting fantastic numbers. How does Hong Kong feel amidst all of this? Of course, it's a special administrative region, but you have, and it almost sometimes feels like, it's sort of being not just sort of in Hong Kong's face, but the world's face, that, look, we're having a party, the foam party is back, etc. And what is that relationship when of course, there's also an issue of proximity that you have as well?
Yeah, Hong Kong has a very weird relationship with the mainland because, of course, there's all this political tension. There used to be a lot of negative reactions locally to a lot of mainland tourists coming to Hong Kong and basically stripping the shelves of various items like, baby formula and things like that. But obviously a lot of Hong Kong businesses depend on that money. And when that when the borders were closed, Hong Kong businesses have been suffering. So, on the one hand, there's this kind of clamor to open the borders with the mainland so that that kind of money can come back. But on the other hand, a lot of, kind of Hong Kongers are enjoying, a bit more space, fewer queues in certain shops. But, what has surprised me is that there doesn't seem to be any kind of obvious animosity to China in terms of, the root of this this COVID pandemic being in Wuhan and all this starting over there and then obviously coming to Hong Kong, and there doesn't seem to be any ill will at the fact that that China is basically virus free and having a whale of a time. I think the focus right now is just opening the borders again, and in the early days, it was Hong Kong that shut the border on China. Now it's very much China shutting the border on Hong Kong. You know, the Beijing government have told the local government here, you've got to sort it out. You've got to sort out your response to the pandemic and get it down to zero cases before we're even going to talk to you about opening the borders. So that's the focus. I mean, the mainland is such an important economy for Hong Kong and for Hong Kong businesses that, you know, everyone's just having their fingers crossed that by Chinese New Year, which is in February, that all-important border can reopen.
But it, at the same time, though, it does sound like Beijing has set, well, not just Ms. Lam, but you know, all of the of course various departments in the region, an almost impossible task because, you know, as we've seen, you know, not well, you're certainly some of your countrymen on the other side of the equator in New Zealand, of course, you know, cheers on one side that they're down to zero cases, but inevitably there's always a case always pops up as well. If you're in Carrie Lam's office or another head of a department in Hong Kong, that yes, it's yeah, I mean, Beijing is just making it, you know, more than difficult to move forward. Or do people see, I don't know if you can say light at the end of the tunnel, but I do wonder whether they think, yes, there is some kind of reality to maybe something happening around Chinese New Year.
Well, they've, you know, when Carrie Lam, the chief executive, went up to Beijing, she was given her marching orders. She, you know, they were told her clearly, go back to Hong Kong and get to zero cases. She had admitted in the past that was unrealistic for those reasons that you gave. There always seems to be some leakage, you know, even though Hong Kong borders are relatively shut, you still have, you know, pilots flying in, you still have Hong Kongers coming back from university, you know, in the UK and the US and Australia. So you, as you said, you do keep having these little outbreaks. But she's the government is trying. They have ramped up the restrictions, and now for anybody coming into Hong Kong, you not only have to do a test before you leave, you have to test when you arrive, you have to do 14 days in quarantine in a hotel, and then you have to do another test on the 20th day. So they really are trying to reach that goal. I think, you know, the way out is, of course, vaccinations. And, you know, Hong Kong is a very small place. There's only 7.5 million of us here. So in population very quickly, it should be Hong Kong. And because so many people travel here under normal circumstances, I think you get quite a lot of people who are keen to get it. We have a very kind of curious and unique situation here where, I mean, the government can't politically buy all of the vaccines from, you know, the US, given the current climate. But if they buy their vaccines from China, nobody in Hong Kong would accept a jab from the mainland. So they've quite cleverly bought a kind of a 50-50 approach. They've got half from the US, half from China. And I guess we're all wondering whether it's going to be a lucky dip if you turn up for the jab. You're not quite sure
whether you can pay a premium, as of course many like to do in Hong Kong. James Chambers, our bureau chief, they're very, very good from you. Have a miss as well.
Merry Christmas, Tyler.
Crossing back to London now, Emma Nelson's there at the bottom of the hour news.
Thank you very much indeed, Tyler. The World Health Organization has contacted the UK authorities following the emergence of a new variant of coronavirus, up to 70% more transmissible than the original. The Sunday Times here in London leads with the headline, "Christmas is cancelled by surging mutant virus." Meanwhile, the Dutch government has banned air travel from the UK due to fears over the new strain. Brexit talks between the UK and EU appear to have made little progress this weekend in Brussels. And winemakers in China have seen an uptick in business after domestic drinkers have looked closer to home following the pandemic. More than half of Chinese people surveyed by industry analysts Wine Intelligence say they were now buying more Chinese wine than ever. Those are the headlines on Monocle 24. Back to you, Tyler, in Zurich.
I'm not good because, of course, Chandra's here. We haven't stopped the fun program, but that's what we're going to do over the next 25 minutes. Okay, so you can still, of course, wine shops are still open, I believe. Well, or maybe these grocery stores are with wine shelves. I'm not sure if wine. I think off license are open, aren't they? Are they considered essential?
I think so. In my house, certainly.
Okay, so listeners, you know what happens. This is where, of course, Emma and all of our other guests today, you know, offer up a very, small notion of what they want to serve or what they want to do over the hours and days ahead. And Chandra is going to, of course, come up with a wine tip. Emma, over to you.
Good morning, Chandra.
Good morning, Emma.
Lovely to hear your voice again.
Yes.
Right. So this year, given the fact that Christmas is likely to be smaller, and we have a 6-kilogram turkey to eat, which is already on order from the Ginger Pig here in London. So believe me, I'm counting the minutes till I start to eat that. I need actually from you this year, if that's right, not just one recommendation, but more than one to sustain the turkey and our souls and our well-being until we're allowed outside again. So I'm terribly sorry to ask you for more than one, but could we have a red and a white recommendation
Perfect.
For turkey?
You know, I am against just one bottle, so I will have some ideas.
The question was made for exactly that right reason, Chandra. Thank you
so much.
Excellent. Emma will have, of course, the feedback on all of that at the end of the program. Marcus, don't worry, I'm going to get to you as well. But first, I want to jump up to Berlin. Christoph Ammann is there, the editor-in-chief of Zeit magazine. Guten Morgen.
Guten Morgen from Berlin. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good. I mean, trying to cope with the lockdown. I mean, I was walking through Kreuzberg yesterday, and I saw a big queue in front of the famous Kit Club, you know, this famous nightclub in Berlin. And the queue was as long as I've never seen a queue in front of that club. And I thought, well, what's happening there? But apparently they've closed down, but apparently they've reinvented themselves as a vaccine test station now for... So people are trying to reinvent themselves over here.
I like the notion of this sort of vaccine reinvention. In a former globally renowned night spot. Maybe we do a very, very quick year in review. Of course, I want to talk about your new issue as well. But Christoph, just tell me, you know, for everyone who, of course, loves the world of journalism and print, maybe that's why they're here this morning. Can you tell me three things that when you look towards 2021 as an editor, someone who loves a bit of course, ink on their fingers, as much as you're doing interesting things digitally, what do you see sticking in 2020 that you think this really become, cornerstones of what Zeit magazine should be doing week in and week out?
Well, first of all, I'm happy, you know, that I have changed my job a little bit have become the editorial director of Zeit Magazine Group, and I'm very happy that we have.
That's me too, as well. I'm the editorial director of our group now as well. Must happen.
Oh yeah, congratulations. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Same to you. So I said, and Andrew Tuck now has to get all of the angry emails, and I've tried to remove mine from the. Not that we get that many.
That's so
course,
funny because my beloved colleagues Maria Exler and Sascha Chaimowitz have become the editors in chief just a few days ago. So we're going into the new year with a new leading team. And one of the things that we've been working on in the last couple of weeks and months actually is our new food magazine that we're going to launch. Because I think everyone has, you know, I mean, you talked about the wines that you're going to have to, you know, be drinking during Christmas time. And I think we all have been in our kitchens this year for such a long time and enjoying ourselves. So we're really working on a food magazine, Zeitmagazin Wochenmarkt, that we'll be launching at the end of the summer. And well, generally speaking, when it comes to print, what we found out at Zeit here in Germany, we expected or we were hoping that our digital circulation would go up during those couple of lockdowns that we've been experiencing here. But funnily enough, our print circulation has also gone up, and it's because people are spending more time in the supermarkets, and our circulation in the supermarkets has been going up. So to find new ways of distributing our papers and magazines is, I think, one of the big tasks, and I know you've been working on this in the last couple of years already, and I think we also have to find new ways of finding new places where to actually offer what we do.
Well, the Nachtzug is still functioning, I think, most nights between Berlin and Zurich. So I think we can have a New Year's drink quite early on to go through this topic, because it is interesting. You know, I think there has been a shift in narrative. You know, and we've sort of said this. It's interesting if you look at, you know, whether now you don't have a Sunday edition side across, you know, from Thursdays through till Sunday, selling more copies, NZZ am Sonntag, FT Weekend, all of these are doing, you know, considerably better than they were certainly doing a year ago. We're talking about the actual print editions, and similarly, you know, we've launched a digital edition for Monocle. It's done okay, but what's been interesting is to see just the solid uptake in the good old print subscription, or people having a combination of the two, which yeah, I'm sure I, is probably I, not I, not dissimilar to what you guys see at Die Zeit.
No, but it's the same thing. I mean, people are using, I mean, we see the same thing where people are, who are actually already print subscribers, are adding a digital subscription so they can use, you know, what we do, you know, wherever they are and whichever situation they are. And I think it's this kind of combination is going to, you know, stick around, going to be, you know, the future for quite a while. And, but, you know, generally speaking, I think for all the bad things that have been happening this year globally, one of the good things is that people, or sort of a certain amount of people, I think, in the population are actually heading towards quality journalism because things are so serious. So they really want to know what's really happening, you know, what's really sort of the context of the news. And I think that is, you know, in this tough year, it's one of those positive signals for our industry.
Just quickly, maybe give us a little reminder. Was last Thursday's issue the last Zeit magazine for the year, or do people get one this Thursday? Is there a Die Zeit that will come out also this Thursday as well?
Oh, yeah. We're here every week for you. So there's going to be another issue next week. There's going to be an issue just after Christmas. So we just keep continuing our job. So the one that just came out, yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, give us a sneak preview, but better yet, maybe tell us what is, because of course it's on newsstand for another 3 days. What's in the paper this week, or the magazine?
Yeah, so the cover, the cover story of the magazine is dedicated to New York, and you know, I've been going to New York since the early 90s, since I was in my early 20s, and I haven't been in New York, not in New York, for such a long time since I've been going. I mean, I have. You know, this year I couldn't go, and I think so many people all over the world who would go to New York, especially in December, are really missing, you know, the city. So we got in touch with Leanne Shepton, you know, this fabulous illustrator and book writer who lives in New York. She's Canadian, but she's been living in New York for 3 decades, to sort of create a cover story by writing and drawing and designing a story about her personal her time in New York. And the first idea that she came up with was, we started talking to her in the summer, and she said, you know, because Milton Glaser had just died, and for her, Milton Glaser was a big influence and a sort of big help in her career. Obviously, the designer who created the I Heart New York logo in the 70s. And for her, this sort of felt like a sort of the end of an era. So she worked on the story from there, and she created this double cover as an homage to Milton Glaser. And I had a conversation with her just a few weeks ago about the current state of New York City, and she said, "Well, there's, you know, all this energy that New York is all about is being, you know, suppressed at the moment, but it's going to come out one time, one day." And she's really curious of what's going to happen, you know, how the city will be changing once the energy can be sort of, you know, go out into the streets again.
And Christoph, just before we go, a little sneak preview as to what we can expect, a little amuse-bouche you can give us for what's going to be in the edition from this Thursday?
The next issue will be about saying thank you to the people to a lot of people who are sort of have made your life a little bit better in this tough year. So there's going to be personal accounts by writers saying thank you and saying, who saved their lives in one way or another. So this is going to be the cover just before Christmas.
And very good to speak to you as ever. I look forward to that meetup. But in the meantime, frohe Weihnachten.
Frohe Weihnachten, and I see you on the Nachtzug.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Or if somewhere in between, Christoph Ammann, the editor, editorial director, also Mazel Tov for that as well. Editorial director of Zeit magazine, joining us from Berlin. Chandra, just quickly, it was just interesting off the back of it. Everyone was sort of nodding. I mean, now this notion of Zeit magazine, the Wochenmarkt magazine, it sounds like just kind of everything. And it's such an obvious thing as well in the most wonderful way. But you know, I can't wait till the end of summer for this to come out.
Yeah, I almost want to send an application to work for you.
No, I mean, you're busy with us,
exactly,
as you know.
Exactly. No, but I think, you know, in every bad moment, I try to see the positive. There's always positive things coming out. And if we have now more interest in better journalism, if we have interest in food and drinks, I think these are the basics of life also. You have to eat well and to drink well. And so it's beautiful to hear this news.
Marcus, nods from your way as well. I think when we look at of course, the retail sector, the food retail sector, that is. But just interesting how, of course, you know, Die Zeit is not a mass title. I mean, this is, of course, it sells very well, but this is one of the most, you know, premium news supplements in the world. But fantastic to see that also that they, you know, they've identified a market that they can go after.
And I think all the words that are coming came from my hometown of Berlin. I can only I can fully agree. I think the one thing is if you are able of defining for yourself what's the value that you can deliver even in a crisis and make something out of it, but which prevails, I'm pretty sure print will not die, and I'm pretty sure it's the hybrid way that we're doing things in the next years. And so for me, it's like, of course, I've got a subscription of the Zeit, of course, but I'm reading it digitally because it's more convenient for me. And I think that it's not the medium that is important. It's the message and the way that you can combine them. And that's another way of bringing across an idea. Make yourself known again for the content that you stand for and not for the technologies that are behind it. That's, for me, one of the biggest things that will be prevailing afterwards, that you stand for something that you have. Many people call it now the purpose and all that stuff. I'm not quite sure if that's the right word. But the idea of bringing equality to people, this is what they will value because this is what they're orientating themselves to.
When on the topic, you mentioned technologies. I'm hoping that technology is going to get us to Tokyo right now. I believe our bureau chief Fiona Wilson is there. Good afternoon or early good evening, Fiona.
Yeah, it's already pitch black here.
And I imagine that the lights are, I'm not sure what the view is, but I imagine the lights are twinkling. I got yet another photo from somewhere in and around Roppongi Hills. And just as we were talking to Christoph Ammann that he has not been to New York for a year, I have set myself the task. So, you know, brace yourself. I'm hoping somewhere around the 22nd or 23rd of January, I'm going to make my way to Tokyo. A year is not going to pass without a visit. But Fiona, we saw at the end of last week, of course, numbers going up, all of those things. Japan still seeming to hold its nerve, which is also important. But the Christmas season is, it's very different in Japan, but it is still, this is the high point of probably global consumerism. And how has it been looking in these days to the run-up to the big couples evening, as it is in Japan?
That's right. Christmas Eve, big night for romance. I was out and about today, pretty busy. I would say what you really notice is you haven't got, you know, in Shibuya, for example, you usually have a huge Christmas tree. That's not there this year. They're being really careful not to have any attractions that bring crowds to certain places. So, you know, there are people around. A lot of the shops are not that decorated. I was in like the North Face. I was there earlier. They had people queuing outside very carefully. Inside, no sign of Christmas at all. So it's a bit of a mixed picture. I think people are being quite cautious. And I noticed that some shops are already getting out the New Year decorations. So they're slightly bypassing Christmas altogether and getting on to New Year, which is a much quieter holiday. It's a holiday when people really stay at home. So a different kind of atmosphere.
You out of North Face suggest that you're obviously in the market for another pair of quilted down booties or something.
Yeah, I can never have enough. I'm not even joking. That's exactly what I was lining up for. I am heading for some snow fairly soon, I hope. And this year's been amazing snow. You know, these these poor ski resorts last year when there were millions of tourists, that the snow was a bit thin on the ground. This year it's been dumping in great quantities, so plenty of snow and not many visitors.
Well, as James, your colleague in Hong Kong, was saying earlier, that on one side, Hong Kongers are enjoying the fact that they do have, of course, the territory back to themselves. They're not having to elbow through the streets. Listen, of course, everyone wants to see a return of a decent level of tourism. I'm sure shopkeepers and hotel owners in Japan as well. But do you think there's also a sense of relief? Actually, the slopes are going to be a little bit more empty this year as well, in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say, because, of course, you know, everyone appreciates the tourist economy as well. But so many people have said they've really enjoyed the, you know, these quieter times in Japan this year, and that the fact the slopes will be quieter, places like Kyoto, which have become absolutely mobbed, sort of return to a kind of more normal way of life. So, yeah, I think maybe people will reflect a bit on that next year. You know, they'll be thinking, hang on, if it was so great, how do we want to do this kind of tourism? You know, but, you know, at the moment it's all academic anyway, because there are no tourists. But, you know, Japan and Japanese people love to travel. And apparently 57 million people took up the Go To Travel campaign offer and have been traveling around Japan. So no shortage of domestic tourists. So plenty of Japanese traveling everywhere.
Okay, Fiona, quickly, we have Chandra here, and Chandra's going to have to think fast on her feet, but you have to tell Chandra about what's going to go on to the Wilson dinner table this evening. Not that the young ones are going to be partaking in the wine consumption. We can save that for Christmas Eve, I'm sure. What would you like Chandra to potentially suggest for you this evening? A small brief would be great, please.
Oh, fantastic. What a treat. OK, well, I can tell you exactly what's going on the table, and I haven't cooked it, which is always good news. I actually bought some yakitori grilled chicken from really fantastic department store in Shibuya. So very simple grilled chicken. It's just got salt on it, maybe a bit of rice, and a glass of wine is much needed. So anything you can recommend.
Perfect.
I think we're going to, Marcus... Well, I mean, Chandra, Marcus is going to give you a brief very quickly, and we're going to have to go back to Fiona then very, very quickly. Marcus, over to you. What are you looking forward to drinking up in Zürichberg this evening?
I'm having a little pie that I bought somewhere else. It's lucky that I didn't cook it as well. A pie that's filled with lamb stew, and so any glass of red wine that you could recommend.
So I start with you maybe immediately?
Yeah, okay. If you can do the wine stew right away, then we go back to Tokyo to Fiona, and then hopefully Emma's standing
London.
By in London.
Okay, let's start with Zurich. So we need Sira. So you can take Sira from all over. This will good. And taste something artisanal. So artisanal, I would say also Beaujolais could work. I will stay definitely on the red wine.
Okay.
So La Sira a little bit stronger, a Beaujolais a little bit lighter.
Fiona's standing by. Fiona? So Fiona, you and your salty yakitori with a little bit of with a little bit of rice on the side.
So
okay, here we go.
When there's a lot of salt, you get very thirsty, so you have to be a little bit careful. But you can a nice, you know, you have this Koshu grape. Why don't you take Koshu barrel aged, which is a little bit more creamy, a little bit more robust. Or, you know, any Chardonnay will do well with the chicken.
Well, I would be careful, Fiona, because we've experienced some Chardonnays from Lawson. I'm not sure that any Chardonnay in Japan will do. But maybe a nice Koshu from Grace Vineyard
could be
nice, right?
Yeah, I would say Grace Vineyards would be perfect.
Fiona, anything on standby in the Wilson cellars?
You'll laugh, but I have got Grace Koshu in
perfect.
The fridge. I always have I'll crack open a bottle of that.
That's good because Chandra always recommends that maybe this can sort of be a new tagline because you're famous for saying Chandra, I believe, and I don't want to get this wrong, but of course, once you always have a good champagne, and you always think a Santorini white should always be in the fridge as well, correct?
This is the new discovery also for this year. I think it was long not so discussed about, but
At least maybe in a global as well. It's fine grace in many places as well now. So a nice Koshu from Grace Vineyard also always in the fridge is a great idea. Just before we go, so you are heading to the snows. I mean, I'm sure we'll maybe catch up again this week. But where will we find you in your North Face? Downfield booties.
I should be heading to Nagano. I hope so. My only concern is I've just discovered that the oven is it would have to be the world's smallest turkey. So it's going to be Christmas Eve, but that's fine.
Oh, that sounds incredibly, incredibly tempting. Fiona, we'll catch up. But till then, Merry Christmas also to all of our crew in the Bureau as well.
Thanks so much. Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks very much. And that just leaves us a little bit of time to head back to London, where, of course, Emma, you heard that poor Fiona has, it sounds like she's got a toaster oven wherever she's heading in Nagano. You've got this 6-pound bird, which is about to land from or land at the ginger pig anyway.
And, it's 6 kilos, Tyler.
Oh, goodness, 6 kilos. Okay, Chandra, what are we going to do? And I know we left everyone that there's going to be red and a white.
Yeah. So the good thing about turkey is it goes with red and white wine. You both wine will fit perfectly. And the classic is, make it very simple, the Pinot Noir as a red and the Chardonnay as a white wine. And you can also, again, like I explained to you the other time, you go old world, new world. If you want to be, you know, modern, more aromatic, more fruity, more dense, you can go, like, for Oregon, you take Drouin or something from California. The same goes for the Chardonnay. You know, usually these two grapes love to be in similar climates. So when you have a good Pinot, usually you find also a good Chardonnay. And then if you want to be more European, Burgundy, of course, is the best spot to find some. But you will find also in other places. But really, and if you ask for Chardonnay, ask for a creamy, you know, almost Baroque wine that will seduce you from the nose and in the palate. So go, that's lush and really seductive.
I'm not entirely sure what my local winemaker will say if I walk in and say I want something Baroque and seductive. But thanks, Chandra.
Marcus is rolling his eyes. I think he was also thinking, but what is that wine cellar? Maybe there's a wine cellar like that in Berlin or up the hill in Zurich. I don't know.
There's just not one in Crawford Street, I know that.
No, most certainly not. Emma, we'll stay there for 1 second. Marcus, just before we go, what will be on the Schugel? Is it a German Christmas, or do you do something more Swissified?
Oh, we're doing fondue chinoise on the fish side, and we have one pot of meat and one pot of fish. We tried this time, and for the second days, I've just got 1.5 kilo of entrecote, and I don't know how to do it. Let's see what happens. So.
Very good.
Very relaxed.
And I'm happy to say that Andrew has just joined us very, very, very quickly. Andrew, you're back. Nice to have you at the end of the show. You can only get a thimbleful of wine, but what can Chandra suggest to you very quickly?
Just anything to cheer me up on Christmas Day would be worthwhile, please.
Anything. So, you know, anything, you go for bubbles. They cheer you up. When the plop of the bottle happens, I think usually you get a positive stimulus.
Andrew, do you need a positive stimulus? Okay,
well, let's stay sunny, Chandra, because I'm sure in the new year we'll get to share a bottle somewhere, somehow. So I'm not going to be too despairing.
I bought some new trees for the terrace also.
Oh, Andrew, that's good. There's okay, some shade for you on the terrace as well. We look forward to that. That is all the time we have for today's program. Chandra, I'm sure we'll see you up in the mountains, but a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Tyler.
And the same to you, Marcus, as well. Very, very good seeing you. Our show was produced by Marcus Hippie today. Also, big thanks to Christoph Amend in Berlin, our James Chambers in Hong Kong, also our Fiona Wilson in Tokyo, but heading up to Nagano with that letterbox size oven. Good luck with that. Also, over here in Zurich, Desiree Bentley has been ably looking after us here. And back in London, Nora Hole as well. I'm Tyler Brulé. We're back next week as well. But till then, have a very, very Merry Christmas and a good weekend. Goodbye.